Now entering Nerdist.com.
I'm testing it.
All I want is for the microphone to get tested. I don't care if it's you who's doing the testing or me.
Do you mind strumming your sweet ass Martin there for a sec so we can just see how that sounds? I think this will be good. And then we're gonna have to sit unnaturally close to each other. Oh, that's great. Gorgeous. That is how Jonathan Colton does it. Finally, we're recording already.
Great.
Jonathan Colton, thank you for coming up to my hotel room to do the podcast.
You're welcome.
Please leave your pants at the door.
Thank you for having me on the podcast.
I'm very happy to have you here at the podcast. We're actually recording this in the bedroom part of the hotel room of my 7-bedroom suite.
Yeah, it's enormous. It's enormous. I didn't know it was all yours, but you said
yeah,
it's all
I got
yours.
The whole top 2 floors of the Waldorf Astoria.
It's easier because then you don't have people coming and bothering you. And
yeah, and I like at least a floor of separation between me and the plebeians, and so that's how I like to. That's how I like to.
This way,
it.
You can't hear anybody when they're doing sex. And
I did hear some people when they were doing sex the other night, but the problem was that the dude was louder than the lady. And
that's a shame.
That was a real shame.
That's not what you want.
You don't want a dude who comes like a girl.
It's gross. That's what I've always said.
It was really gross. She wasn't that.
Maybe she was watching TV.
She might have been watching TV. I actually wrote a joke about it because she said you fuck so well. And I just thought, like, you're not into it if you're using proper grammar. If you have the presence of mind to use an adverb, you're not into the fucking that is before you.
Maybe you have not let yourself go.
You have not. Oh, why is my phone ringing? No one ever calls me up here.
Oh, it looks like you might have a message.
Ah, fuck it. You can wait. Message.
It's gonna beep every. Every 2 or 3 minutes.
Well, that's not going to be irritating at all.
Well, we'll see. I could be wrong.
We'll see how it goes. So you noticed that the shower in the bathroom, which you can see, has no door, and you were kind of lamenting for a second because you thought maybe you should have done the same thing in your house.
You know, we moved into a new place in Brooklyn a little over a year ago. And
ooh, okay, Your Majesty.
I know. Look out, right? Look out. It's a new place. And we did a lot of renovations, and one of the things we did was we redid the bathroom, and yeah, I desperately wanted I don't know why, maybe not desperate, but I thought it'd be cool to have one of those doorless showers, because you just walk right in.
You walk right in, you walk right out.
You walk right out, you don't have to worry about a door or a curtain or anything like that, and then everybody's like, water's going to splash on the floor. And I was like, no, I'm pretty sure I've seen this.
No.
In places.
No.
It's impossible.
No such thing.
You cannot be done.
Yeah, but in the early days of showers, they probably just... No.
No. Right, before they had doors. Did they do before they had doors?
At some point, there were no doors. At some point, there was a cave, and then a woolly mammoth would spray water on you and then complain about his job, and you'd go to work for Mr. Slate.
And then he'd be like, it's a living.
I'm tired of staring at these uncircumcised cave boners. That was my favorite Flintstones animal complaint. Animals as things complaint.
It was a primetime show for adults, so they could talk about boners and circumcision. It was not a kid's show. That's what people have forgotten.
Yeah, Fred's got the swordfish and he's trimming Wilma's pubes, and the swordfish with the serrated face.
Yeah,
and he would trim. I mean, he'd have to get it out of his closet, and then of course he'd go in and the bowling ball would fall on his head. But he would get the mini swordfish pube trimmers. Oh my god! Why does it always go there first?
I think
for
this
me?
Podcast is going really well.
Mm. We always earn the explicit tag.
We're getting
always. We work for it.
I feel like we're getting to the meat of it.
this is what I'm here to talk to you about. But I do actually. I guess, when did I meet you? It was a couple of years ago. It's been a couple of years now.
We met over the phone.
Oh, right. We did meet over the phone.
When you called me and invited me to do a show with you, and I said yes, and then later I said no.
Well, your agent said no, but I understand why. I understand why, because that was sort of the point where, yeah, because we were doing some Hard and Firm shows, and we were like, oh, we should do a Colton Hard and Firm double bill.
Yeah.
But it was sort of at the point where you were breaking at that point, so you were able to fill a much larger venue than we were able to fill a couple years ago, and so... Yeah.
That was part of the problem. It was also right before I did my DVD.
Oh, right.
In the same city.
And you can't...
And I didn't want to, like, blow the audience. Well, I didn't want to blow the audience. You know, I care about my fans.
Of course, of course. That's what you can expect at a Jonathan Colton show.
But, you know, I didn't want to... I'm glad we're doing this. I'm glad we're getting past this.
Oh, yeah, no,
I felt like a jerk, because, I'm such a huge fan of you guys, and I think I told you when we first spoke that when I first came across your record, the Hard and Firm record, I was shaking my fist at the skies for a good week and a half.
And I feel like we had the same experience. We were like, oh, this was brilliant. Why didn't we think of this? But I don't think... But I understand, like, you can't go into a market too many times... in a short, because then you cannibalize, because everyone's like, oh, I already
right.
saw
it's
that.
Boring. I don't want to see
yeah,
that again.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, I from a live performance standpoint, we understood that. Yeah. And we've since done shows together.
Yeah. And it's at the Max FunCon.
Max FunCon. I believe we did a Woodstock. We did a Largo show.
See,
today.
I have not done a Woodstock.
Oh, you haven't done a Woodstock? Then no. It was just a Largo show I did with you.
Yes, that's right.
You and Paul and Storm.
That's right.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah. That's
yes.
That's what it was.
Which felt like a Woodstock.
It was, yeah. It was a mini Woodstock.
It's a mini Woodstock.
Minus Will and Molly and Adam Savage and and whoever else. Neil Gaiman, whoever else would show
up.
At
whatever powerful nerd superstars are part of the Woodstock.
That's right. Benjamin Franklin. I believe Edison showed up.
Benjamin Franklin, yeah.
Johann Gutenberg demonstrated his printing press. But, you know, I feel like you're one of the guys who sort of broke the ground on the whole free internet culture. And really capitalized. I mean, like, before Radiohead did it.
Sure.
You,
They are constantly stealing from me.
They are constantly. I would love to hear Tom York cover,
Jonathan
the 1st
Colton
of May
tapes.
Or something.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
But, so what was your plan? Like, what did you, where did you get this idea? And maybe you would want to explain the idea for people who don't
Well,
know.
Yeah, so the story is that, in 2005, I'd been working at this software company for about 10 years, not ever having intended for that to become my career, and doing music on the side and as a hobby, and wishing that I could do it full time, but never being able to figure out how to do it. And then finally I said, fuck it, I'm gonna quit. And I don't know exactly what's gonna happen, but you know, I had released a CD, and I'd been playing a little bit here and there, and I was getting positive response. So I was like, well, let's just spend a year, you know, pushing things a little bit, whatever that means.
And you're married at this point?
I was married. I had a child. My first child was not yet one.
Okay. And so your wife was like, this is
one.
A good idea.
Yeah. She was like, I am 100% behind you. Whatever you want to do, baby. It was a difficult conversation to have because...
You know how I bring home money regularly?
You
That's
know that,
boring, right?
That whole health insurance thing. Do you really need that?
He's gonna be fine. Look at him. He's fine.
He's not sick.
No, he's gonna be. How much trouble could what could happen?
But it was a difficult conversation to have. I think mostly because it was like the way I like to approach things is by not planning or preparing for them. That's just my thing.
Right.
And so that was my strategy for this too. It was like, well, step one, quit job. Step two, something happens.
Step three,
money is flowing.
Party on a yacht.
Right.
Party on a space yacht.
You know, and I was like, you figure it out as you go. And so she was, her main complaint at the time was like, I just wish you had, you know, a plan of some kind. I would feel better if I knew what you were going to do. So really, it got about 2 weeks into my unemployment, and I was like, I'm just going to play Xbox all day if I don't do something. So I started releasing a new song every Friday, and just publishing them all as a in a podcast feed on my website, and just kind of hoping, you know, well, a couple of things, you know, let's pretend this is a job,
right?
And that you have to produce material on a regular basis, right? Even though nobody's paying you to do it.
That's the Seinfeld formula.
Right?
Pretend like it's a job.
Right. That's right.
Pretend like the job that you want to have is your job.
Is your job. Yeah. Exactly. And then the other thing was, you know, maybe doing it... This is kind of a stunt to do a song a week. And, you know, maybe I'll attract some attention and somebody will hire me. That's what I was thinking when I was starting. Mm-hmm. Is somebody will hire me to do something. Hire me to write music for a show. Mm-hmm. Or hire me to... whatever. And then, you know, over the course of that year, it became clear to me that people were actually purchasing this music, purchasing the MP3s that I was putting up, and I started to actually make money that way. And then by the end of that year, I had done a couple of shows in front of audiences in cities where I didn't live, and it was clear that something was happening, and I was actually starting to make money that way. So I was like, well, okay, I guess this is my job now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I get a lot of undeserved credit, I think, for cracking the nut of you know, internet musicianship, but I feel like it was sort of an accident that it happened for me that way.
But you know, just... accident. I mean, I don't know if it was necessarily an accident, and also, you know, your point of view, like the astrology of it, is perfect. Your point of view, this is sort of like a clever, geeky point of view,
right,
is perfect with an early adopting internet crowd who, you know, because in 2005, even though it was just 5 short years ago, I mean, the word podcasting and RSS feed was not really part of the general vernacular. I'm not even sure RSS feed still is, but but still, it... you know, it was...
I don't even
just
think
the
there
right...
were MP3s in 2005.
There were not, I'm not sure if there were MP3s. People were downloading physical albums.
Right.
And they were materializing Logan's Run style.
Right. You would download a printout of a physical receipt that you would then take to a Kinko's and you would fax it to the company. And you then would, they would send you a disc that was a download.
And you would take it to an audiosmith.
An audiosmith.
Who would craft it into some type of music cube.
Right. They have a big bin of zeros and another big bin of ones. And they pull them out. And it puts on his special glasses so that you can see them.
This conversation was directed by Terry Gilliam. So that's great, and now you are completely self-sufficient in terms of, like, you tour. And
I tour, and I have stopped writing music, so that's good.
Mike Furman thinks Mike Furman, like, when he we you know, because Mike released a solo album, and when he was putting together his website for that, he always went back to your website, and he was like, "God damn, Colton's website is perfect." You've got the lyrics, you've got the chords, you've got like, everything's right there. You've got the donation tab, you've got everything. He's like, it's just right there, it's all so simple. do you feel like, what did you do for the software company?
I wrote code. I programmed computers to do things.
Now, you may say you didn't have a plan, but a programmer not having a plan, had some sort of flowchart in your head.
I did, but seriously, the flowchart was really sketchy. I mean, it's a good point, because that's how you approach software too. You say, like, okay, I know there's going to be a screen.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be some boxes and some buttons,
mm-hmm.
and they put in some data and they hit a button. Something happens, right? There's a black box that you're going to write later.
Yep.
You're going to figure out what and out comes this report.
That's right.
And so, and you don't, when you're first approaching it, you don't think about the details of that black box. And it's sort of like concentric black boxes, mm-hmm. each of which does something important in some magical way. And it's like, you got to start somewhere, you know? And then once you figure out what this bigger box does, then you go inside and you see what the smaller boxes do inside that. So yeah, I mean, to that, you know, in that way, it was a plan.
If then. The if then plan.
That's, yeah, the if then plan, exactly. The for next plan.
Oh, that's a book title right there waiting to happen.
The For Next Plan.
Yeah, that is a book title.
Self-help, just a sort of self-help, but based entirely on...
For programmers.
For programmers.
When did you start, when did you get your first computer, when did you start programming on this one?
Oh, God. The first computer I ever touched was a TRS-80.
Me too!
Yeah.
I had one. It didn't do anything.
No, it didn't do anything at all. I didn't have one. My grandfather had one, strangely.
My grandfather had computer stuff, too.
Yeah, he was really into computers early on, and he was already an old man, and he was... It was funny, because he was sort of a... You know, he was a technology fan and an engineer, and but he already had a... Looking back now, he already had that sort of weird old person relationship with a computer,
mm-hmm.
where he was always very careful about... You know, gingerly putting the disc in
well,
the slot.
Well, to be fair, the TRS-80, you really needed to be...
You did.
It barely turned on.
You needed to sing it a song and
just stroke it.
Give it a dinner before it would do anything.
What am I? Am I, love?
No.
No machine?
Computer, execute program.
Execute.
But it was... I learned word processing. I went through all of my grandfather's word processing tutorials on mm-hmm. the TRS-80. And I think at that point, my dad was like, oh, kid likes computers. Let's send him to computer camp. Nice. So that summer, I...
For all the pussy.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of ladies. And they are, let's just say, they're built for speed.
Yeah.
And so that summer, I went to learn to program BASIC. And I had, I wrote a program that you would enter your name and then it would print your name 1,000 times.
10, print Jonathan Golden.
Yeah.
20, go to 10, 30,
I was
run.
Jealous of a kid who was really good with peek and poke. I didn't really understand what was going on with peek and poke, but he was all into it. There was another kid who was actually making sort of a Space Invaders thing on his TRS-80. It was beyond me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he was actually like, we were doing the graphics thing and drawing with the, you remember you used to, there was actually a grid and you would sort of like, pencil in
yeah.
the shape you wanted to make,
yeah, yeah.
and then you would sort of draw the. I don't even remember exactly how it worked.
Like, I had the TRS-80 color computer too, right after that, which hooked up to your television set.
Holy
I remember
cow.
It was just a console and used your TV as a monitor, so it hooked
yeah.
up. You know, it hooked up through the antenna somehow.
Was it the TI-1000 that was the touchpad? It had 1K of memory.
Oh, maybe.
It had a touchpad and it was hooked up to the TV.
And was that the one that had cards that went in? There was one that actually had the
cards
that slid
yeah.
in the side.
That could be.
I
had a Commodore 64. I had the Atari 2600 BASIC cartridge. which was incredibly lame.
I love the time when where you used a cassette recorder
yeah.
to load up your data.
Yeah.
We sound like old people.
I remember explaining to my mom that the good thing about having a Commodore 64 was that now she didn't have to keep all her recipes on these cards, and that I would make a program to manage her recipes, and she would just have to load it up from the tape. And
isn't that funny?
I'm
glad that technology has finally caught up with the scenarios we played out in our heads in the 80s that
right.
never happened in the 80s.
Right.
Especially with those early Radio Shack robots, where you're like, I mean, he can bring me food?
Right.
Like, well, someone's got to make that food and put it on the robot. You basically you have to make it, put it on the robot, and then beat it to the couch, which is not hard to do. So you're really doing twice as much work.
And you're probably going to have to get up a couple of times when he gets stuck.
He's going to fall,
yeah.
get stuck.
Yeah. Well, I know it's true. It's like the kitchen computer is here. It's the iPad,
mm-hmm.
essentially. You know, that's the thing. It's like
I call the iPad the bathroom entertainment center.
Totally, absolutely, Uncle John's bathroom reader.
They really should market it as that. Should pull back
all the commercials. People instead of because it's all about laps, right?
Yeah.
It's all about the iPad on laps. So they should do it. Except you should just see their pants around their ankles. please wipe the screen down before you bring it back to your family. That's all I'm saying. Just keep some disinfectant wipes.
Oh, there's an app for that. God. So unimpressive that I always go straight there. Do you want to play it? So, you know, I was going to say like, oh, maybe play a couple songs at the end, but I kind of feel like maybe we could do this NPR style where we converse.
Sure,
and then,
yeah,
and then
do a little number.
You play a thing, and then we talk about it afterwards.
Yeah.
That is a gorgeous guitar, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a Martin 000C-16 RGTE.
Beep, boop, beep,
beep,
boop.
Boop, boop.
It's gorgeous. It is a wonderful guitar, Martin's.
I've had this guitar for many years. This guitar has seen me through my entire career as a professional musician, as a matter of fact.
It's been there through the thick and the thin.
Yeah. And it has strings that are about 8 years old, I was saying.
Oh, really?
Not really 8 years, but...
No, I have a couple of Martins, but I also just got a Gibson that I really like not that long ago.
Yeah, an acoustic.
Yes.
Yes.
It is a really full-sounding Gibson.
Yes.
It's one of the jump... Like the J200, I think it is.
And sure, sure. It's one of those,
full,
like, strum. Yeah, this is kind of a thin guitar.
But it sounds fantastic.
It does have a nice sound. It sounds very good when you plug it in, too.
These Martins get better with age, too, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, because the wood something non-scientific.
That's right. The wood does a thing that
the
makes
wood
it
does a thing. It
sound
gets,
away.
It gets sweeter.
Yeah,
the wood gets sweet.
What are you gonna play for us on Nerdist Cafe today, Johnny?
Gee, no, I don't even know what to play. What should I do? I'll do a song. This is a song that I do when I can't think of what song to do. this is an old favorite. It's a pretty good introduction to the Colton
Ouvre
because it has robots and sort of nerdy bad feelings and sadness.
This is Jonathan Colton on the Nerdist Coffee Clatch.
This is called Doorless Shower. Last week I left a note on Laura's desk. It said, "I love you," like anonymous friend. Turns out she's smarter than I thought she was. She knows I wrote it, now the whole class does too. And I, all alone during couple skate, she skates by when some guy.
You know, I had the headphones in, I was listening, I was like, oh shit, I wonder if we're too loud. I took them out, it sounds fine.
Oh good, thank goodness.
Because the last thing we need is someone banging on the hotel ceiling going, it's too early for cyborg songs!
It's never too early for cyborg songs.
Well, you and I agree on that, but yeah. Some of the jerks who are
also,
staying
in also, I will point out that you have the sweetest corner room I've ever seen. You're like right here on Lexington Avenue, and you have... Yep. You literally are in the corner of the building, you have windows looking out on this gorgeous...
It's a very nice room. It is a very nice room that they put me in. I got a view of the Waldorf Astoria.
Yeah, well,
from the movie Coming to America.
Did really? Say that on the marquee? It says featured in the movie Coming to America.
I wish it did. I really wish it did. But the other thing that's funny is, of course, it's New York. So if your shades are up, everyone, you know, like 50 rooms can see what you're doing. And the way that Colton and I are positioned right now is that we're sitting at the foot of the bed.
Yeah.
Kind of facing the bed, so I feel like it looks like we're giving last rites to
I'm not sure
someone.
What people would think if they looked in here and saw what is happening.
Trying to figure out what the hell's going on. Make sure I get the recording level up a little bit there. So the was that the first song that you put out?
No, that actually predates professional Jonathan Colton life. That's from when did I write that? That was written for a thing that I was doing with Hodgman, John Hodgman.
John Hodgman.
You're familiar with John Hodgman's work.
Mr. Hodgman is, first of all, one of the smartest people you could ever meet.
He's a very smart man, yes.
And I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast before, but one of my favorite professional moments of all time is being at Max von Kahn. Max von Kahn, by the way, our friend Jesse Thorne, who does the brilliant Sound of Young America... Once a year has started this thing in the mountains of California.
Yes.
Called Max FunCon, and you go and it's like you're on basically like a compound.
It's sort of summer camp weekend for nerds.
Yes, exactly what it is. There are comedy shows, there are seminars. It's fantastic. And so Furman and I did it one year, and you were there, but we were in Hodgman's cabin. And so it was you and John Hodgman and me and Mike Furman,
yes.
And Merlin Mann,
yeah,
of Kung Fu Grip,
uh-huh.
And our friend Scott Simpson.
Scott Simpson and I think Lonely Sandwich was there for a while too.
And so it was basically a collection. I looked around and I'm like, well, this is the room of probably some of the smartest people that I've ever been in a room with in my entire life. And we spent 3 hours coming up with movie titles that sound like shitting.
Yeah. it's a hard game to explain, but once you get going, you can't stop yourself. And it came from... Hodgman was doing it on the set of one of the Apple ads. Somebody... It might have been Justin Long who brought it to his attention, but you just sit around in a group and you keep naming movie titles, existing movie titles, that when you imagine... the movie is about shitting, become funny.
Like, I think one of Hodgman's was Operation Dumbo Drop.
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, There Will Be Blood. That's a classic.
Grease.
Grease. Five Easy Pieces.
The Longest Yard.
The Green Mile. It's, yeah.
The Brown Bunny. You can, and the problem with this game is that you can't help it. You wake up in the middle of the night, you're like, The Expendables! Like, you can't stop. It overtakes your brain, and you can spend hours doing it. So that was one of my favorite all-time moments.
Yeah, that was a good, I have to say, that was a good comedy session.
It was nice!
Because the nice thing is, like, there was no, it was just all sort of social pretense had dropped away, and we were just sitting there, sort of all of us staring into the middle distance, trying to think of poop jokes for 3 hours. And it was great. It was really nice. We didn't. There was no talking anymore. We didn't have a conversation.
No.
We just did poop jokes for 3 hours.
For three straight hours.
Bliss.
It was really a wonderful. It was really a wonderful time.
That was a lot of fun.
Those were the days.
But yeah, Hodgman is a very smart fellow, and that song was, I sort of found my writing about geeks talent, I think, in the process of working with Hodgman when he was doing this thing called the Little Gray Book Lectures.
Mm-hmm.
Which was in Brooklyn, sort of once a month, he would curate an evening of readings and slideshows and music and cooking demonstrations and whatever all to a particular theme.
God damn it, that's the kind of stuff you can do in New York. I feel like it's hard. That's a hard sell in LA for some reason.
Does that not work as well in LA, you think?
I think it's, well, New York, everything
feels... Because everybody's dumb there in LA?
Well, I'm sure that's part of it. But the other part is that, you know, New York is just so communal. Mm. But LA, you know, you have to drive everywhere.
Right.
So you know, you have to know what's going on and then go there on purpose and then park and then, you know, like...
Right.
New York, it's like, oh, there's a thing across town. Let's just hop in get on the subway, hop in a cab. We're right there.
It's very fluid.
It's a very fluid culture, and there's foot traffic here, and it's just different. Also, maybe a little more academic of a culture.
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's so much going on in L.A. I mean, I guess there's a lot going on in New York, too. Not in Brooklyn. Nothing happens in Brooklyn.
No, hipsters happen in Brooklyn. No,
hipsters happen in Brooklyn, but that's not even really happening, really.
No?
No.
Hipsters take over an old doll factory and turn it into some kind of hipster haven. A bunch of...
We're going to turn this deserted street into a giant mustache.
It's the kind of stuff it... Hipsters!
Just because we can do it, man.
Hipsters!
Go, hipsters.
Who do you find is the sort of core demographic? Who are the people that are coming out to your shows?
It's, you know, it's nerds. There's a lot of nerds. Skews slightly older, I think,
uh-huh.
which is to say my age,
uh-huh.
you know,
uh-huh.
people in their mid to late 30s,
mm-hmm.
Who are frequently systems administrators, often have a bag of dice with them. Some of them wear top hats or capes.
Is there any steampunking going on?
There's a little bit of steampunking. Occasionally you'll see a goth chick with kitty ears.
Uh-huh.
It's a tricky thing because there is the nerd aspect to it, which is pointless to ignore or pretend it's not a very real and integral part of who I am and what I do, but mm-hmm. then, you know, I do have a number of sort of straight ahead songy songs, and I try to mix those into the shows so that it's not all robots.
Well, you don't necessarily think of yourself as a comedian first. Do you feel like you're a musician
first?
I get
because I do funny songs, you know, I get categorized as comedy music a lot of the time, and you know, I've long since realized that you don't really get to pick what people think you are.
No.
That's just happens.
But you know what they love when you go on stage and yell at them when you try to correct them?
Yeah.
This is not what I do. How dare you pay to... And then label.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's... You know, I always say this with Furman, because we stopped... Hard and Firm stopped doing comedy clubs.
Mm.
Because it's much... I feel like, as musicians, it's much better to be the funny guys in a music venue than the music guys in a comedy venue.
Yeah, the music guys at a comedy venue are always... There's always that... Because I've done a few comedy shows, and it's always that thing, you come out... I mean, comedy audiences, when you come out and they don't know who you are,
right.
they sort of sit back with their arms crossed, and they're like, all right, what do you got?
Right.
You know, and you have just a few moments to either get them or lose them.
And songs are basically sketches in the sense that if they are not on board within the first like 10 seconds or so, or by
you're screwed.
Yeah. Then you have to finish it.
It's 4.5 minutes long.
We're all going to sit here. We have had that.
Or it's like it's also there's the pressure to, you know, comedy audiences are there to laugh and not much else. I mean, I think that's not always the case, but mostly that's what people want to do is they want to laugh, and then a few seconds later they want to laugh. A few seconds later they want to laugh. This
right.
is a very one note thing, and so when you're doing a song, it's like you can't do a song that is a joke every second. You need some setup time.
Can if you're Stephen
you?
Lynch. You can if you're Stephen Lynch.
Well, yeah, no, it's true. I mean,
it's just a different kind of thing.
But that's not what I'm interested in. You
right,
know, I don't,
right.
I don't like. I don't. I'm not. I don't want to write those kinds of songs. I like to have a setup.
Right.
I like to have a denouement.
Uh huh.
I pronounced that terribly.
No, no. I just got back from French Canada.
Oh,
and
wow.
I thought that was very.
Did you have any bagels?
No.
I hear there's a bagel. Was it? We were in Quebec.
I was in Montreal.
In Montreal?
Practice France, as I often
practice
call it.
Practice France.
Yeah.
Montreal apparently has a big bagel thing. But they have a bagel culture that is entirely different from New York bagel culture. Like
bagel culture sounds racist.
It is. That's what I mean.
No, they have delicious food.
I'm talking about Jews.
That's what I thought you were going. In Montreal, they don't, well, first of all, they don't like anyone who's not from Montreal. They don't like other Canadians. They don't like Americans. Yeah. It's a little bit of a...
Do they like French people, do you think?
I think they probably... Yeah, they probably like French people in the way that, like, a freshman loves a senior.
Yeah.
Like, they're sort of a, oh, I wish we were you.
Yeah.
You know? Someday.
I think even French people hate French people. Yeah, I was in Montreal. I did a show in Montreal, and I did a, at some point along the way, I have this song about zombies called Read Your Brains. And at some point, a fan who was from either France or Montreal, I don't remember which, sent me a French translation that he and a friend had worked on, of that song. And I recorded it and put it on the website because I thought it was kind of awesome to have it.
That's pretty great.
In French. And then I was in Montreal, and I said, well, I should do that. I should do the French version.
Because you, in your head, you're thinking, well, how could this not destroy?
Yeah, they'll go crazy.
Language that they all speak.
Right. And I had to write it all out because it's like real French, you mm-hmm. know. It's not just conversational French,
right.
And it's very hard to pronounce. There's a lot of
zombie,
sure.
Zombie.
There's a lot of elided words and
right.
stuff smushed together in the way of actual speech, you know. And I really struggled to get through it. And I also felt like about half the audience was pissed off that I was doing something in French.
How dare you?
Yeah. How dare you come to French Canada and speak in French
and try to relate to us? And if you hadn't, they would have been like, how dare you come here and speak English, your disgusting, guttural,
yeah.
Germanic language.
Now that I'm remembering, I'm remembering that I started the evening by speaking in French, by introducing myself in very poor French, because I'm not great at speaking French. And I have this thing with foreign languages where I kind of think it's funny to say ordinary phrases in foreign languages.
Right.
It's just amusing to me.
They did not. They were not on board.
Well, the thing is, when you're in that country and you say, you know, when you're here and you say, the pencil is yellow.
Yes.
It's hilarious because it's in French. But when you are in France and you point to a yellow pencil and you go, le crayon est jaune, and they're like, yep, that is a yellow pencil.
C'est une paille ou une pipe. I would say this on stage, like if a joke didn't fly, I would apologize and say I'm a stupid American. So I would say désolé, je suis un Américain stupide.
Yeah,
and then that would kind of pull them back in.
They would go crazy.
I was telling them in their language that I'm stupid, and they love that.
That's the essence of comedy, isn't it? You have to tell them in their language that you were stupid.
And here's what was in French Canada. I found that a lot of the shows there, they didn't appreciate word jokes as much.
Yeah.
Like, there was one whole show where every comic, and some of these guys were, like, the most amazing comedians in the world.
Yeah.
Guys like Tim Minchin or Noel Fielding or Bill Burr or whatever. Anyway, just these amazing comedians. And the show went okay, but then at the end, a ventriloquist went up and it's like they wanted to give him the key to the city. You're like, all right, well, this is
puppets always win.
Puppets
always win. Everybody gets what's happening.
They know.
That's not a real dude.
He does not have vocal cords in his throat. How does he talk?
He's being operated in some way.
His voice is magically appearing out of the dummy.
He's a mouth. She move.
He's...
That was sort of Italian.
That was the way. Italian.
It was Mario.
Where is it? The mushroom shop.
It was Mario going to the ventriloquism show.
I am making Luigi talk. I am a Luigi. I am a piece of a shit.
I am how you drink water while I talk. Are we,
how you eat the mushroom while you talk. How you gain the fire power while you talk. You eat the fire flower, Luigi.
See, me eat the fire flower.
See, me eat the fire flower. Okay.
Wow, that just got weird. Mario doing a ventriloquist act in a French-Canadian comedy club with Luigi.
Something needs to be done with it. I don't know what form this art should take. But
we need to call up the president of YouTube. We should get a development.
Let me speak to Bob YouTube.
This is Bob YouTube.
I got one for you.
Okay.
Check it out. You know what a ventriloquist is?
Yes, I'm French Canadian. The one is our president.
You're gonna love this, Bob. You're gonna love this, Bob. A couple years ago, there was a game called Mario.
Okay, I'm on gold.
I'm on gold.
So, I'm so tickled inside right now. Okay, I feel okay now.
Wow.
Do you have another song that you want? Because I don't know how to segue out of. I don't know how to segue out of the weird Mario.
I don't know. There was a weird swamp.
That was like a dream.
It was like a weird dream,
and there was Mario, and we were in Montreal.
Like a ventriloquist dummy, but
I don't know. And then something happened.
Talking about mushrooms.
And then the president of YouTube was like,
"You were singing a song, but you were in my hotel room."
I don't know. It was weird.
The Waldorf Astoria.
And then movie titles were shitting for some reason. I'm not really sure.
What now? Now I'm really okay. What should I do? Why don't I do? I'll do here. This is a hit. This is the hit from the thing a week here.
I don't suppose you could do the zombie song in French.
Oh no!
That will not be written out for me again.
No, I will not do that again. It was really bad. I had to stop it like 8 times.
Oh,
it was really like I would be like, oh, sorry, everyone, and I would have to start again. It's not a good way to do a song. This is a song that I wrote about halfway through Thing a Week. Became sort of a smash success because it is about a sad software designer, semi-autobiographical, and apparently there are a lot of sad software designers out there. This is Code Monkey. Code Monkey, get up, get coffee. Code Monkey, go to job. Code Monkey, have boring meeting with boring manager Rob. Rob say Code Monkey very diligent, but is out of stick. His code not functional or elegant. What do Code Monkey think? Code Monkey think maybe manager wanna write goddamn login page. Himself, Code Monkey not saying out loud, Code Monkey not crazy, just proud, and Code Monkey like Frito, Code Monkey like Tab and Mountain Dew, Code Monkey very simple man, big warm fuzzy secret heart, and Code Monkey like you. Code Monkey your sweater look nice. Code Monkey offer buy you soda. Bring you cup, bring you ice. You say no thank you for the soda, cause soda make you fat. Anyway, you busy with the telephone. No time for a chat. Code Monkey have long walk back to the cubicle. He sit down.
Code Monkey just waited. For now, Code Monkey's here. Coffee House 20 Run.
I fucking love that song.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, Monkey's a gorgeous song.
When thank you're you. Playing live, do you bring a band, or is it like do you try to bring a band, or do you just like to play
it's
alone?
It's funny you should ask. I have always done it just me and an acoustic guitar, frequently with Paul and Storm. Mm-hmm.
Who are, can I just pause for a second and say, wonderful.
Wonderful, funny, talented, great people.
If you don't know the Paul and Storm, go online and find them. They are Paul and Storm on Twitter.
They're really great in every medium, it seems.
They're phenomenal.
Yeah, they're really great. But we tour together quite a bit, and they are kind enough to come out and sing backup on a couple of songs and shaker eggs, and it's really nice. But I'm working on a new album right now, and I have done two shows with a band that is sort of newly forming around this album, and it's a brand new thing for me, and it's weird and kind of awesome. It's really fun to play with a band, I gotta say.
Jonathan Colton and the Supernova Explosion.
Yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad, actually. We don't have a name yet, actually. I gotta think of something. It's right now it's just power trio. It's me on electric guitar,
mm-hmm.
which is
oh wow.
They've electrified a guitar now.
They can do that now.
Yeah, you plug it into. I guess you plug it into the wall or something.
I don't know what.
But
somehow
it's,
electrons are excited.
Electrons are excited, and then everyone else gets excited too. it's nice. It's a new thing. I it's a very different kind of guitar playing. Of course, I was terrified to work with other musicians because I just hadn't spent a lot of time playing in bands, really. Mm-hmm. I've never felt like a really technically fantastic musician. But
you're doing it the right way, because when you just form a band and everyone's on equal ground, then it's a pain in the ass. You can't do your thing unless everyone can make it, and, you know, if someone's late or if someone doesn't show up or that, you know, like, but when you're the kind of the band leader, then you can be like, I'm hiring you and you need to be here or you're fired.
Right.
Like,
we're not going to do one of your dumb songs. That's not.
I don't care that you just broke up with your girlfriend. We all have problems. Just go over there and play bass. Stop crying onto your bass. You're going to short it out. It's electric.
But it's really thrilling, you know, to play with a band. The drummer is Marty Beller, who's this guy who is the drummer for They Might Be Giants, and mm-hmm. the bass player is a guy named Chris Anderson. Both live in Brooklyn.
Not my boss at Wired Magazine, Chris Anderson.
No, and also not the TED Conference Chris Anderson. Okay. I think there's another Chris Anderson, too.
Jesus.
I know, the poor guy. He's never going to get any Google.
How many? Love. Yeah, I know. That's bad SEO right there.
That's really terrible
that's really
SEO.
Bad SEO for
you. Until he hooked up with Colton, and then suddenly that's going to be the Chris Anderson.
That's going to be the metadata that needs to be embedded.
And the album is being produced by John Flansburgh of They Might Be Giants.
You played with them. That's right.
I toured with them. I opened with them for about a week and a half. Yeah. They're awesome. I mean, they are heroes of mine. Mine too.
I saw them play the Flood album at Royce Hall in Los Angeles not that long ago.
They're so terrific, and they've just been so smart and funny, and they've been doing it for so long. And they, you know, talk about people who've broken new ground. Like those guys. You know, all of us nerd people owe a great.
There's no question that if you kind of peel back and look at the double helix that is Hard and Firm, you will see like a Tom Lehrer strand and a They Might Be Giants strand who at the Flood show referred to some of their songs. I could never put into exact words what the majority of their songs are.
Yeah.
And he, I think it was Flansburgh, said, this was one of the first, this was when we first started writing what we refer to as fact-based songs.
right, sure. Why does the sun shine?
Is actually from an old
which
album.
They didn't write, yeah.
Yeah.
That was the only one I could think of, and then I realized they didn't write it.
Yeah, I was trying to think of another one, too.
But like the Alphabet of Nations is mm-hmm. sort of a facty song, and Meet James Ensor.
Mm-hmm. The Mesopotamians.
James K. Polk.
Yes.
Yeah. Fact based songs.
They're so fantastic and so much fun to see live. That's great that you get to work with them.
Yeah, I mean it's really exciting. So I've gone from this is a nice side effect of being a semi famous person is that you you know, you have a sort of special entry card that gets you into the club, mm-hmm. and then suddenly you find yourself, you know, I'm now sort of regularly exchanging emails with Flansburg about songwriting.
Yeah.
How the fuck did this happen to me?
I know.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
I kind of had the same experience with Weird Al. I'm like,
yeah,
I'm friends with Weird Al now.
That's the same Weird Al that I know.
If I could go back, well, actually, it would destroy the timeline. If I went back and told my my young teenage self that I was going to be friends with Weird Al, my heart would explode, I would be dead, and then in the future I would not be friends with
you would never be able to father yourself.
I would never be able to father myself?
I think that's what's... Isn't that the...
Let's say
the
yes.
time paradox?
I guess that is the truth. Yeah. That is the truth.
We've all fathered ourselves, and...
Hey, take it down here, J.J. Abrams. I get it, you like time. I want to know what... How is your... Has your... When you're writing a song a week, how many did you end up doing?
Well, 52-ish. Although some of them were cover songs, and there were one or two that were sort of reworked, pieces stolen from old stuff. And
I think especially a lot of people who like to create stuff who are listening probably want to know, how the fuck do you soldier on when you're in week 28? And you know, like Sunday night, you're lying in bed, you probably can't sleep, and you're like, I have nothing this week. What the fuck am I going to do? I've written 28 songs already. Surely yeah. that's enough, but I have to keep going.
You described every week. Every week was like that. I kept thinking it was going to get easy, and I was going to sort of figure out the trick.
Right.
But there isn't a trick. It's just hard. It's just hard. It's just always
how
difficult.
How do you break... Because the creative wall... I think pretty much anyone who makes anything hits the creative wall, and
yeah.
the sort of defining moments are, well, I either just give up and go play Xbox or go back to a job I hate, or
right.
how do I get over this wall or break through?
Well, I will say that the fact that I had said on the internet I was going to do this meant that it was very hard to not do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't want to be that guy who's like...
Public commitment. You have to make public commitment.
Make a public commitment, and then you just do it. And then it's just like, it becomes... People ask me all the time, like, you know, I'm the creative person, and I have trouble getting started. I'm like, yes.
Right.
That is what it is to be a creative person. But what you have to do is just do it. And there's no other way to say it. It's like, you got to sit down, you have to pick up the guitar, and you have to start playing it. Right, it sounds very obvious when you say it. You have to start playing it, and you have to see if you have any ideas.
Well, but that's the thing.
And if you have any ideas, you have to work with them for a while. And it's like, even if it's not good, you have to go forward with
that's
it.
The thing, is that you want it, you know, I think some people, especially super creative types, get caught up because they feel like they should have the product formed in their head before they start it.
Right.
And you really just need to start it, because a lot of the times... Something Furman and I say when we're writing songs is we go, well, let's just get into the song, and then the song will tell us what it needs.
Yes.
Like, once you get into it, which I know sounds kind of stupid and new agey, but really, once you start making it, you go, oh, okay, well, this needs this, and this needs a harmony here, and this needs this instrument here.
Yeah, but it doesn't happen unless you actually move forward. And there's a point in every song's life. Here we go.
They're like our children. When you're making song babies.
But there's a point in that process. Every song that I've ever written, I thought sucked for most of the time that I was writing it.
But you keep making it.
But you keep making it. And it's like when you've made this, you know, when I had made this public commitment and was doing a thing a week, it was like, well, this week is going to be a sucky song. And certainly there were some songs that were sucky all the way through mm-hmm. until when I published them and still remain sucky to this day. But most of them turned a corner at some point, often at the last moment,
mm-hmm.
often after I had finished writing them in my head, they would turn a corner and I would say, oh, that's actually kind of interesting, or that's actually funny, or that actually went in a different direction than I thought it was going to go, mm-hmm. or even that's being perceived in a different way than I thought it was going to be perceived. And it's really just about, you know, if you're ever stuck, this is what I always say, if you're ever stuck creatively, then make it your goal to create something that is bad,
right,
and worthless.
Yes.
Just do that.
Yes.
Because as you start doing it, you will find that you're actually making something good.
Well, and that's an interesting... There's a songwriting exercise that some bands use where when they're at a roadblock, they just say, well, let's just write the hackiest thing we can think of.
Right.
Because in the process, their filter sort of... They end up getting something that's almost useful in the end. But ultimately, at the very end of the process... Even if nothing else, if you can say to yourself, But I will have written 52 songs, and there's no way I will not be better off by the end of that experience.
Totally.
Than before it, when I was all in my head about it and I couldn't get it started.
Yeah, and it's funny, I'm still in my head all the time. I mean, as I'm working on this new album, you know, with Flansburgh bugging me, where's the new songs? Where's the new songs? I'm like, shut up, John Flansburgh. But, you know,
might be giants. These songs might not be done yet. Why don't you take it down a peg?
But I am still as blocked as I ever was. Like, you would think I would have learned something from Thing a Week, but really I haven't. It's still hard, and I still have to push it through, and like, I still think it sucks for most of the time that I'm writing it. I still have not learned to trust myself. It's the craziest thing that your brain does when you're trying to make something.
Well, that's the constant ratio that you have of, you know, your it's sort of like the belief and ability, and then the output. There's this ratio, and no matter where you are, it just always kind of surfs right on the edge the whole time.
It's
but
always
maybe
the same.
And I'm not saying that everyone has to have that, but that's just how that's certainly how my mind works too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But for whatever reason, that's just the thing that kind of keeps us on our toes,
right?
A little bit,
exactly.
Because you don't really want to get to the point where you're like, you don't want to write a thing and go, this is awesome.
Yeah, this is awesome and this is easy.
Yeah.
I can do this in my sleep.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I don't really want to fart out great songs.
No.
It would not be satisfying, and it would feel cheap and awful after a while. I mean, there's certainly some songs that I wrote, you know, that are sort of nerdy and gimmicky in a way that I'm a little uncomfortable with now. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, that's too easy. Like, that idea... You're that concept, that comedic concept is too easy.
But you had to write that and get it out so that you could look back and see that. I mean, like, you need those sort of you need that sort of growth barometer where you can kind of look back at the chart and go, ah, okay, I do actually, when I put everything together, I do see a bit of a
right,
of an arrow going up, yeah. Fortunately.
Exactly.
So what is the new album called? Do you know yet?
I don't have a title for it yet. I have, we just did two shows in Massachusetts with the band. Mm-hmm. Doing six new songs, half dozen new songs, and then I gotta write another, you know, half dozen or more, and take out some of the bad ones, and then we'll go into the studio hopefully soon and start recording some of these things. So
do you ever go back in and look at old stuff that you were like, well, this will never see the light of day, and kind of have a new perspective and go, oh, this might be useful? Do you ever go through the old boxes?
I have a back catalog of half finished things that if I'm stumped, I will sort of surf through all the bad, and I'm like, they're all like, we all recorded, like, you know, at the kitchen table into my laptop mic. Uh-huh. With my children yelling at me behind me.
Right.
And it's funny because most of the time they're bad. And like, I think back and I'm like, what was it that made me think that I really needed to capture that, even though my children were on fire? But I really
Daddy's
grab
busy.
That.
This is the Steve Wiebe. When you're at the, I pooped myself. Daddy will be with you in a second.
Yeah, there is one that I just listened to that was me playing a little guitar part and like singing quietly in a microphone, and the whole time my son is like, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy,"
oh,
and
it's released.
Like,
that
that's a piece in and of itself. Like, that should be the song.
That's the song. That's the extra layer.
I'm
that
just
you're
ignoring
never
him
predicted.
Singing.
Daddy's following his dream. Did you? Oh, by the way, I believe Firm and I are going to write one of the Legend of Neil themes.
Oh, fantastic.
And yours, well, Paul and Storms was phenomenal.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they have the Barbershop Quartet background.
Yes.
But yours, god damn it.
A little soft rock vibe.
When your harmonies kick in, it's just like, holy shit, it's fucking great. Do you ever wish, you know, like, you could go back in time and sort of be like a Leo Sayer type, or, you know, like a 70s yacht rock kind
yeah,
of,
well, I feel like I do that. I feel like I am capable of doing that. For somehow my fans let me get away with doing all that 70s stuff. I fucking love it.
It's,
I mean,
so good. I love it unironic. Like Jerry Rafferty. I'm a huge Jerry Rafferty
fan. Oh,
sure.
I mean, it's that like, I'm such a sucker for sensitive, picky things with beautiful, breathy harmonies. I just, like, I love it.
Have you ever heard the song Sentimental Lady by Bob Welch? Bob Welch played in one of the early incarnations of Fleetwood Mac.
No, I don't think
so. He has this 70s hit that's called Sentimental Lady, and I got hooked. I got stuck on it for a little while. And
yeah.
So I was playing it for some other friends of mine, And so we're like, what's Bob Welch up to now? It was the most insane rabbit hole. This guy has a website, and we find his website, and it's got, first of all these weird covers of his versions of songs. He does like a weird jazzy version of Hot for Teacher.
Wow.
Which is very bizarre. And then the rest of it is about how the government is lying to us because of aliens.
Oh,
so
man.
So he has this radio show in England, and he gets this NASA guy on the phone, and the guy's like, well, yes, you know, there are aliens living among us. And it was just the funniest kind of... Bob Welch's reaction was like, whoa,
he's like,
wait
sure,
a minute.
We got the scoop.
It was almost like the infomercial for aliens. Wait a minute, are you telling me? Wait a minute. It was the most, like, this from a 70s yacht rock song, and then now this is the worm can that has been opened.
That's fantastic. You know, I hope that that is not in my future. You know, you think about when you're an entertainer, you think about that arc that you've seen happen to so many people, and you're like, man, I really hope that in the future I am not a crazy person with a crazy website.
I hope not.
Talking about aliens.
But, you know, the 70s and 80s was like pre-irony era.
I suppose that's
and
true.
And so now, like, we
all have... those people were dumb.
We just have more... I feel like there's just a little more self-awareness now. There's, like, there's art that's being created with a wink of, like, isn't this crazy?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So if you do have the alien website, I think it'll be ironic.
I guess that's true. I wouldn't mind having an ironic alien website.
That wouldn't be terrible.
I feel comfortable with that.
Do you feel comfortable playing any of the new songs, or do you want to?
I could try doing.
You don't have
stuff,
to.
Sure.
Like, it's just we're right about in an hour, and I was going to have you like wrap it up. Do you want to? What?
Yeah.
You should close with whatever you want to close with.
But no, I'll do a new one. You know what though? I'm so bad at this. I need to plug something.
Okay.
Can
Yo,
I
no,
plug
you
something?
Should plug anything you want.
I'm going to plug something right now.
Let's plug whatever you want.
It's a cruise.
You're doing the... Yes!
We're doing the cruise, and you can't do the cruise because you are afraid of sharks.
Well, it's just that they impersonate humans,
yeah,
and...
I know.
They,
it's cute.
They come on the boat, and you're like, look at that weird ensign dressed as a shark, and then you cut in half.
Yeah, and then
you're
cut in half.
But you're doing the cruise in January.
In January, it's January 2nd out of Fort Lauderdale. We're calling it Joko Cruise Crazy,
and that's right about CES time for me. So I'll be working at G4.
I'm sorry you won't be there, but Furman will be there.
Mike Furman will be there. Paul and Storm will be there,
and we have Bill Corbett and Kevin Murphy of Riff Trax.
Yes,
Molly Lewis, the famous ukulelist.
Yep.
Well,
hopefully we'll be 21 by then.
Oh, I know. I heard about that Free Molly incident.
Yeah, when we did Woodstock at Comic-Con, they literally made her sit outside in the loading dock the entire time. She could only come into play. They had to escort her on and then escort her off.
And who else? Will Wheaton? John Hodgman? I mean, it's a star-studded event, and it's on a giant cruise ship, which is awesome.
That is awesome.
The pictures on the website are just like... insane. You know that sort of like Vegas hotel look?
Yeah.
Everything is like super glitzy and glamorous. Or like your hotel room here. It looks like this, except it's
everything
a giant
boat. Just feels like James Caan.
It's all the showers? Doorless.
Doorless showers.
Completely. So anyway, people can find out about that on the website, and they should come because it's going to be a lot of
JonathanColton.com.
JonathanColton.com. That's right.
Can I tell you another heartbreaking story about Woodstock?
Yeah.
I almost wish Paul and Storm hadn't told me. Oh, actually, maybe Will Wheaton told me the story. It was fucking heartbreaking. I guess they had some friends come the venue we were playing at, 4th and B, who incidentally was going to have like Snoop and Ice Cube in one of the next weeks. Two disparate groups came to our show than theirs. But anyway, this guy came to the show and he was late, and so they wouldn't admit him. And in tow with him, his friend Joss Whedon.
Oh.
They denied Joss Whedon from the door people at 4th and B because they were late.
That's a shame.
And so it's just...
Did he say, do you know who I am?
I don't think he did say, do you know who I am? And Joss is a very sweet guy, and... So, but just knowing that there were like 750 nerds there, that just on the other side of the door was, you know, was
their
Joss
king.
Whedon, Joss Whedon, and the door people didn't let him in. That would have been a case where the nerds would have ripped the door people limb from sinewy limb.
That's insane. Yeah. But it's also, it's kind of, in a way, it's kind of kick-ass, because you're like, you know what? Sorry, Joss Whedon. You are late. You are late to this party, sucker.
I'm pretty sure the door people didn't have the Joss Whedon awareness that we all have.
No, I don't think they did.
In any case, that was one of only two heartbreaking stories of Woodstock. The rest of the show was amazingly fun.
It's Woodstock is all about heartbreak, really. At the end of the day,
it's all about making up for past heartbreaks. Growing up the way we did.
That's right.
So what song are you gonna play?
I'm just seeing if I can remember actually how
to play.
We're
gonna play a Blueberry Surprise. You gonna play?
I don't like Blueberry Surprise anymore. I'm tired.
You gonna play Cyborg Farm?
Cyborg Farm. No, I don't want to do Cyborg Farm, man.
You gonna play Test Tube Baby with a navel? They're not supposed to have them, right? The baby's in the test tube.
Yeah, that's the twist at the end. Is it's a test tube baby who has a navel?
Oh my god!
Holy shit! That's crazy. How do you think of this shit?
I don't.
No, this is a song. This is a new one. This is off the new record, which is not recorded yet, and won't be for 10 years or however long it takes. This is about shopping and also about something else. I'll just start playing it.
It's Jonathan Coulton on the Nerdist Coffee System.
I am glad to be shopping here with you. I will sit on this chair till you're through. I will wait with your purse. I won't. Be fine.
was monitoring the thing because I hope it's not. I hope it didn't blow out. I'm like, oh,
I know.
No.
I was yelling there. It was a little higher than I remember.
That song is incredible.
Oh,
now, when you write a song like that, does your wife go?
She hasn't heard that one yet. I don't know. We'll see. I haven't decided how personal a song that is. Just popped out, you know.
But you heard it first here on the Nerdist Coffee Warp. Trying to make it as
Nerdist Coffee Warp.
The Nerdist Coffee Warp. Because
it doesn't even make any sense.
I know.
It's vaguely evocative of something, maybe.
There's some science-y element to it, but it's still coffee-esque somehow. But, Jonathan, I am so thrilled. I mean, one of my favorite things about doing what I do is that I, sort of like what you said, I get to meet people that I would listen to and that I respect.
Right.
Were I not in this business at all. And so it's a real treat to, you know, just be able to kind of get together and talk shop and hang out.
Totally. Well, as I say, I'm a huge fan of you as well.
We're slobbering at each other.
No, this is a bed right
here. This is how nerds make out. You're smart. No, you're smart.
Shut up. You're smart. You hang up.
Oh, I was trying to think of one more shitting movie before we.
that should be pretty easy. All I can think of is the ones that we've already said. You know, we decided this is a couple of different. There's the mentions of blood, which
right.
You do this game, you come to various
right.
strategies. One is the mention of blood. So
right.
You have blood simple.
Right.
There will be blood, of course. Right. Crimson
red,
Tide.
Red Dawn.
Red Dawn, sure. Right. That's a fun one as well. And then there's the diarrhea option. So, you know,
Midnight
like,
Run.
Midnight Run. Right. Like Water for Chocolate. And then there's these sort of...
River runs through it.
Sure. And then there's the final phase of this. Right before acceptance, I think, is when you start doing ones that have nothing to do at all with poop, like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
And then you somehow, like, I guess it just
I guess it's
kind of
something, I don't know.
The Muppet Take Manhattan.
What? Rear Window.
Rear Window. Totally right.
Stuart Little.
The Player. What? What is that? Black Dynamite.
Speed 2.
Speed the Time Cop 2? Time Cop number 2?
Cyborg 2, Glass Shadow?
Time Bandits? Brazil? I'm just start naming everything. But anyway, thank you so much for coming to my hotel room. And also, can I just mention that I ran into you. I went to a Starbucks to get some tea.
Yeah.
It was too crowded. I walked around the block to another Starbucks. Not only were you in line at Starbucks, you were coming up to the counter. I got to cut the line.
That's right.
And we ordered our beverages together.
How we play it in New York City.
It was a synchronous event.
Well, thanks so much for having me on. It was a pleasure hanging out in your hotel room.
JonathanColton.com and @JonathanColton on Twitter. Look for the new album, which hopefully will be out soon. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
The end.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.